Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Joa Milne and this is Get 2020 Vision. This is the Skill, Careers and Technology podcast where I sit down to chat and learn from a number of the brightest minds in technology and business. The thought behind this episode stemmed from a recent study I came across, which suggests people don't find out what they truly want to do in life until they are 33 years old. The same study suggests that millennials will work in as many as 11 different industries. So, I want to know, why do so many people feel trapped or lost when it comes to work? And what is it actually like to reskill for a new career in a new industry? On this episode, I'm speaking with DevOps consultant Victoria Sacre and Head of Engineering at Nationwide Building Society and Director at Tech Talent Charter, Ian Andrews. Okay, so firstly, welcome to the show, Victoria and Ian. Can you first both introduce yourselves to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what it is you both do? Victoria, I'm going to start with you.
Hi, I'm Victoria. I recently just finished my training with QA Consulting. I am now on my first client site, which is CanCom, and I am currently training to become an Azure expert.
Amazing. Thank you, Victoria. Ian, let's hear a little bit about what it is that you do.
Hi, my name's Ian Andrews. And what do I do? I look after engineering for Nationwide Building Society, but that's been a very long career that's kind of led up to that point. But it's just thrilling at the moment, the pace of change that we've got in our industry, and just to be in some way, shape or involved with that is just awesome.
I want to know from both of you, what was your first ever job, Ian?
Right. I was a bouncer in a nightclub.
I can see that.
Really?
Sorry.
Darn it.
No, it's just because you look strong and stuff. It's good.
I'm coming back. So bouncer in a nightclub. And that was more about earning some money and kind of make sure that I had some ends meeting. And ironically, that made my first job in tech really tough because I would go for interviews and people would look at your experience and say, really? Really? Not sure. So I would offer to go through coding tests just to say, look, I'm doing this to pay the bills, but actually I can do that.
How judgmental.
This was going back quite a few years
now. Okay, fair enough. Fine. Victoria, what was your first ever job?
Oh, I'm laughing back now. I was a cleaner.
Oh, interesting.
At my local university, I cleaned the students' accommodations and worked as a cashier for at least about a year.
All those jobs.
Yeah, all those part-time jobs I suddenly remember so fondly. Yeah.
So Victoria, I hear that you have a sort of reskilling story. I would love to hear a little bit about what that is.
Okay, so I started off wanting to be a graphic designer roughly around school period. I knew what I wanted to be very early on in life. And I kept with that goal all the way up until my undergraduate university, where I finished it and I got my first couple of roles. And only then did I sort of discover that the industry had completely changed by the time I had come out. Everyone wanted developers or web design and things like that. So I wound up self-teaching myself quite a lot. I started off with web design and after a good couple of years, I decided, you know what, I'm just going to go back to university and do a master's degree. So went back, did that in computer with digital media. Finished and now I'm here. So
amazing. So the kind of out. Would you say then the motivation for those different, I guess, reskilling at different points was kind of market driven, or did you feel that you kind of, you know, you had to in order to get a good job? Or
I feel like I had to in order to get a job, if I'm honest, because a lot of the roles that I applied for kept saying I didn't have enough experience, but I wasn't able to get the experience required. So I felt like the master's degree was kind of my only option by that point.
Ian, I'd like to hear a little bit about your experience, because you've obviously been slightly on the other end as Victoria has been in, you know, doing the reskilling of other people. So tell us a little bit about that process and the Tech Talent Charter you've been involved with.
So, ostensibly, the Tech Talent Charter is there because the government believed there to be a digital skills gap that would land about now. So we started around about 2016, 2017. But it was on that understanding that, you know what, the required skills are just not present in the UK. And largely industry had outsourced that to India and other offshore and nearshore places. And what we were really finding was that computing was no longer a commodity. It's actually a differentiator. So a lot of those skills we're now trying to bring back into the UK. But there is an issue, I think, with education and STEM subjects in general that actually it hasn't been sexy or pretty to go into those. There hasn't been the kind of role model ambassadors to encourage young people into those careers. And so what we're finding now is there's a huge gap in the market, and there is this idea that actually how are we going to start plugging some of that? Tech Talent Charter was really around the fact that there was this kind of male-dominated environment that we were in, and how do we get better gender diversity? So how do you encourage more women? How do you encourage return to works? How do you do that reskilling that you were talking about? And fundamentally, it was about joining the dots with organisations that had really great stories to share, and those organisations that were just desperate to learn. And more recently, it's not just been that kind of diversity. It's been all sorts of other diversity, whether that's neuro, whether that's race, whether that's BAME. You know, there's a whole additional area. And this is around trying to remove the biases from the workplace and generate less about diversity, more about inclusion. So when we're encouraging people into the environment, are they feeling like actually this is somewhere they want to work and they're valued for the skills that they bring?
It's really interesting. The previous episode of the podcast, we were focusing on apprenticeships. So people at the sort of early start to their career normally are the people that do apprenticeships. Here, we're kind of focusing on maybe people further on in their careers who are sort of maybe realising, or it's being put upon them, that things have to change.
Yeah.
What would you say, from your perspective, Ian, teaching people and taking people through that process, what's the sort of challenges that people tend to feel in changing job? Is there a stigma attached?
I think there is. Now, most of my experience generally and certainly nationwide has been at the, okay, you've got an interest. Now, how do we cultivate that, and how do we take you from having no skills whatsoever in terms of tech to actually being comfortable? What I'm generally seeing is people that have got that aptitude and that desire to learn. And I think once you've got that, then you've got this kind of genesis of something you can work with. But there is a stigma. There's certainly an imposter syndrome around actually, do I deserve to be in here? And certainly our programs at the moment are a bit of a mix of those that I have degrees in a technology-related discipline and those that have come from totally different career bases. Mm. And in Nationwide, we're taking people that have been involved in our branch network. So they've worked as a teller, effectively, and just saying, right, actually, if you've got the capability, if you've got the desire, then change. We're taking ex-school teachers, people that just want a career change there. And these generally, the stories are all the same. They're all like, we always had this desire. We always loved technology, but just thought that actually careers would be somewhere else. So I think that one of the oldest that I've seen transfer so far has been mid-40s.
Amazing.
It is just the excitement that you see in their faces. They learn something new and they start to deliver something new is encouraging.
Victoria, from your perspective, you said, from a young age you wanted to be a graphic designer.
Yeah.
But now you work in DevOps. Was that transition, do you feel, you started learning about technology and you found a passion for it, or did it kind of come from a needs base? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I guess my interest in technology sort of came from school. I was very interested in computers at such a young age. It's just I never sort of considered that as a career from that age. I was always looking to combine both art and technology, which is what my original plan was. And it wasn't until later down the line when I actually got my first experience in web design that I actually decided, actually, I like this, I like to do this. Mm. And yeah, it just sort of spiraled from there, really.
I suppose it is that thing around opportunity, right? If you don't even know the job's there in the first place, how can you possibly either know how to do it, never mind how to train for it?
I started my web design passion from going to evening classes, really. It was sort of free classes that companies hosted where they would teach you sort of the basics of it, really. And that's kind of how I learned most of my skills from. And then I went on after that to teach it at a university where they were bringing in some females who are interested in learning, and I wanted to really get involved with that. So I did that for a couple of semesters, which was fun.
Oh, so you've seen the other side of it as well.
Yeah, I've seen the side where I started, and I've also watched other people sort of learn from their own experience.
Yeah, exactly, seeing it from the other side.
Mm.
So we mentioned earlier on this recent study that says you don't find your true calling until you're 33 years old. What do you guys make of that, Ian?
Darn it, I can't remember when I was 33 years old. It doesn't surprise me. And you know, I think gone are the days of job for life and single career. You know, and we're much more in a world of, well, do you know what? The opportunities abound now. There is enough support and enough material out there for you to learn anything you like, right? And I think some of this is about, you know, trying to find the things that we enjoy and that we get paid for. Mm. Now, you know, some moves will be out of necessity. It will be, you know, jobs are closing and you need to reskill. Whatever the provocation actually is, I think there is an attitude about, again, you know, if you want to learn, if you want to pick up, and if you want to do something different, have a go. Just get stuck in. I mean, what are we really risking? We make a bit of a wrong decision and we try something new again. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me. And actually, probably the only thing that does surprise me is at 33, really, you know, because I'm kind of looking at it now and thinking I'm a little bit older than 33. I know. Luckily, this is a podcast rather than a video, but I'm closer to 50
now. You wouldn't know.
Thank you. But, you know, so for me, it's, well, what's next after this? You know, do I want to carry on doing this, or actually do I want to do something very different? Who knows?
What about you, Victoria? What do you make of the age 33?
Oh, I hope not.
That means I've still got a while to go.
I can kind of see it. I mean, people sort of experiment with different roles at quite a young age. They come fresh out of university. The first job they're going to go into is not necessarily going to be the right job for them.
Because there was that another survey suggests that the average person will now have 11 jobs in their lifetime. I mean, I would actually say that's quite low. I feel like I've already had 11 jobs and I'm 28. So
I've already had 11 jobs.
why do we think this is? You mentioned earlier on, you know, you can learn any skill, Ian. You know, you can Google anything and try. Do you think it's just that sort of, I don't know, they talk about on Tinder, the grass is always greener, so everyone's always looking, this sort of choice paralysis. Or do you think it's something more than that?
I think that there probably is, but because we're all individuals, our own motivations to do whatever we want to do, whether that is kind of some social conditioning from when we were young about what our parents do and wanting to follow in their footsteps, or a great role model that we just want to try that and kind of get into it and think, do you know what? Not really interested. Or it might just be that kind of actually money is the motivator, and actually you're just hopping around to find that latest source of income. I think, you know, I am surprised as well by the as little as 11, because some of my experience now is that some of the younger people coming through are portfolio workers. So that actually they may have two or three jobs on the go that satisfy different areas of their interest. So, you know, some social investment type of work mixed with something that's going to challenge them, which mixed with something that's going to actually pay the bills. So I'd be surprised if it doesn't get a lot more portfolio driven.
I think also it's about value, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of value placed on people that have multiple skills and can bring kind of a whole person to the table. I mean, obviously you're going to have, Victoria, your design skills as well as your DevOps skills, and I'm sure, and your teaching skills as well, you were talking about. So I'm sure that all of those, when you bring that whole self to work, is a much more valuable employee than someone who's only trained in one track.
Yeah, I often found that it was mainly temp roles that I could go for when I went out of university, because I found it extremely difficult just to actually find a job due to my location, because I don't have to relocate. My experience, that was also another thing, because I had my university experience but I didn't necessarily have role experience or job experience, which was the other problem that I faced.
I think there's something in that then about what do we really mean by skill, right? Because we were talking here about, you know, we're talking about tech skills there with Ian. You're talking about, you know, helping people have these sort of technical capabilities. But, you know, you mentioned there, Victoria, you know, experience working in an office is highly valued, or experience, you know, teamwork we always talk about. So, you know, when you talk about reskilling, what sort of skills kind of bring to mind for you guys in terms of kind of 21st century, 22nd century jobs? Let's start with you, Victoria.
Yeah, social and communication skills, because it's very important to communicate and work well as part of a team. And also the technology skills is great to have, but without the communication, you're not really going to get very far, I'm honest.
No, that's fair. That's fair. Ian, what about you?
Well, I think it's probably key to how people do their career swaps is that there's, in my view, there's a grounding in something that they feel comfortable in or we feel comfortable in, whatever skill that might be, and whether that's a softer skill, whether that's a gifted orator, someone great at presenting, maybe it's someone that's got, you know, just the ability to collaborate, the ability to draw people together. So there is this kind of how we interact as humans that I think is a core capability, a core skill. And we're not all great at it. But of course, if you bring teams together that are all brilliant at it, then they probably aren't going to function correctly as a team anyway. Yeah. So I think you've got all of those kind of the softer skills. And then you've got technology. So, yeah. You know, can someone program? Can someone pick up a database technology or a distribution technology? How does that work? What are the kind of graphics that we're placing? What's UX look like? What's UI look like? And it's quite surprising, actually, how untechie you need to be to actually draw on some experience and be able to share as well. The one thing I think I would value more than anything else is that curiosity. Mm-hmm. You know, if you haven't got that, how do I make myself better? And particularly in tech, it's changing so quickly.
Yeah.
If I had stopped learning when I finished college, I would be a well, maybe I am a dinosaur now. I would be a dinosaur right now.
Stegosaurus, so, specifically.
Thank you. Let's give a name to it, right? But you have to accept that the world is changing around us, and actually. The social skills, I think, are going to be a given. The technology skills, I think, are the ones that actually you just need to keep yourself current with.
Yeah, you also need passion as well to learn.
Totally.
You really do.
The answer is almost my next question. I was going to say, ask quite a crude question, which is just, how easy is it to reskill? What do you think?
There's got to be a provocation somewhere along the line. I mean, there will be people that stay in jobs for very long periods of time and get very good at it and not want to move for very genuine reasons. And there will be other people for which life events will take over, you know, a divorce, a breakup, the loss of a job or something like that, which then forces a decision. Or it could be just, do you know what, I'm bored, or I can do more than this, or do you know what, I don't want to do this, I want to try something else. And I think if you're going to get to 33 years old and have a career swap, if the rest of industry is looking at the graduates and saying, well, actually, sorry, I'm going to get the classically trained people now, then industry is missing a trick. But certainly the curiosity will see you through, I think. The desire to change is the thing that has to come first.
It also links then a little bit to my next question, which was around how accepting do you think employers are to people who are reskilled? Because, I think it's a myth from personal experience that companies don't like it if you've switched careers many times on your CV. I haven't been in that many jobs for any longer than a year and a half, right? And so I'm maybe that sort of person that people look at and say, oh, you've switched careers. Why are you not loyal to companies? You keep changing what you want to do. We don't want to hire people like that. My personal experience is that's not an issue. But I'm curious, maybe from Nationwide as a big business, and also from your experience, Victoria, did you guys feel any sort of resistance or see any resistance to this acceptance that people are quite happy to jump around sometimes or would like to change? Or, you know, are they saying that looks like you're not loyal or you get bored too easily or something like that? You're looking very pondering.
I have had the experience where I see someone's CV and I think, right, they haven't held a job for any more than a year. And actually, you know, there is a level of investment that as an organisation we put into accepting that a new employee isn't going to be up to speed and therefore they're probably not really productive until, I don't know, the end of the first quarter of them being with them. And then thinking, well, okay, and then I've only got 9 months left. That's a little bit of a worry. So it's kind of like, is this going to be a repeating pattern? But the desire to learn is something very different. Mm. Now, in Nationwide, you can have multiple different careers even in one organisation. It is so big and it's got a genuine care for its people. And therefore, I think you can see people moving around. And it's a question we haven't yet asked that, you know, if you were going to do a complete career swap, you've probably got to accept that actually your pay and your conditions might then need to go down because do you know what? Actually, you're starting at a slightly lower rung in another part of the organisation. So building up smaller companies, I think it's a little more difficult to do that career swap. And you're probably talking about a job swap with a different organisation at that point. And then I suppose you're getting the same experience. It's just a little bit more tricky.
What do you think, Victoria?
I mean, throughout most of my interviews, my favourite question that was constantly asked was, so you've got all this experience in graphic design, why do you not want to be a graphic designer?
Yeah.
And it was really hard to answer that question. Or, like, why have you not gone for a graphic design role? It was just so hard to answer that question because I was so passionate about it for so long.
Mm. Yeah.
And
yeah, it's just one of those questions that I just couldn't really answer in a way that would make me seem more passionate yes. about what job I was going for than graphic design. It was really hard to sort of get that balance, really.
I think I had a similar situation, but it was kind of the other way around. So I studied maths, but one of the first jobs that I wanted to do out of university was work in advertising.
Yeah.
And every agency that I interviewed with, they were like, why on earth are you wanting to come and work in this creative industries when you have a maths degree?
Yeah.
You know, why are you not going and being a coder or, you know, working a bank or something like that?
Not that there's anything wrong with either of those two, just saying.
I worked in a bank to begin with, Ian, it's all good. But I, you know, I felt that the way I had to kind of quote unquote deal with that was the first line of my personal statement. The first line of my CV was, I'm not your usual maths nerd. And it was like I had to go in and sort of own this idea that I was changing, and that yeah. was okay. But, you know, as maybe that was a sort of lucky stroke of genius, because I, you know, didn't really come up against the question in such a disparaging way, and more in a, oh, that's interesting that you're doing this weird switch thing. You kind of, you're an intriguing individual.
Mm.
I want to switch tracks a little bit and go back to this idea of tech skills, because of course there is a bit of a focus on tech skills on this podcast. So have any of your decisions been based on this wider implication that automation and robots may bring? We've talked a lot about this, you know, robots are going to steal our jobs. You know, are you guys worried your job is going to be taken by a robot anytime soon?
See, I'm at the end of my career. You see, I hurry up, bring it on. You know, I'm sure there's some difference engine that can work out all the decisions I make and go for it.
I mean, they always need someone to fix the robot, so
nailed it exactly, yeah. exactly. Always a role for a human. Yeah. You know, I want to hear a little bit about the sort of skilling evolution and what you did at Nationwide and the fact that you took retail bankers and retrained them.
Yeah, so this goes back to the digital skills gap, and it seems really, I don't know, you take any large organisation when they are going through a pivot. That they would normally turn around and say, look, we've got skills in this, in A, we need skills in B, so let's just get rid of everyone and then go out to market and hire some more. If we take it as a given that our tech skills market is actually quite empty, if you like, there just isn't the people there, then it makes no sense turning around and saying, let's get rid of a whole load of people and then assume we're going to find a whole load with the new skills. So both UK government and Tech Talent Charter and Nationwide are kind of investing in retrain to retain.
Hmm.
And you know, the premise is really easy. Like, if we let someone go, it's going to be that pivot moment in their life, so they're only going to retrain to go to somewhere else. Well, if they're only going to retrain anyway, why don't we take on some of that for them and allow that to do that in paid employment? And you know, in any organisation of any standing, the chances are that you're going to have some legacy technology, which actually you're going to need the skills for as well. But, you know, it's the idea that if I've retrained someone, they've still got all those old skills. And if need be, if emergencies happen, we can still go back and use them. I think it's vital that we do that. I think it's vital that we actually focus on our own people and turn around and say, look, if you want to carry on working, if you believe in what we're trying to do as an organisation, then why not stay with us and we'll try and help you through into a new career. I don't see it as a personal failure if that doesn't work.
Mm.
I'd see that as a, okay, we've both got to an end of a road here, and you know, if you don't want to retrain and actually we don't need the skills anymore, it's a grown-up conversation. Go off and do something you love somewhere else. They're never nice conversations, but actually sometimes, you know, they're the most thrilling journeys that people go on. But, you know, if I come back to why is it so important for us, I think there is the, you know, if we truly believe we're investing in our people and not retraining, then we're missing the mark somewhere along the line. And if we're not able to turn around and say, here's a safe place for you to learn, you don't have to go off and try this out in the market, that actually we've got the capability here, then great.
I think if we reframe this idea of learning as from something that, you know, you do at school and it's something a child does to something a relevant professional does in the 21st century is probably quite a powerful narrative. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, how it feels to actually do this change, because I think we've kind of made the case that it can be done and it mm-hmm. should be done and so on and so forth, but changing paths can be really stressful. Do you have any top tips to make sure it goes as smoothly as possible? I'm going to start with you, Victoria.
Oh, top tips to make sure it goes as smoothly as possible. Always do your research. Just make sure that it's definitely what you want to do. Just sort of explore all the avenues that you could potentially go into with this role.
There was something I read in this this new book called The Squiggly Career by Helen Tupper and Sarah Ellis, and they talk about this idea of strengths and weaknesses. And instead of, you know, we're kind of taught to focus on our weaknesses and try and make them better, but instead they're saying actually it's much more interesting and useful to focus on your strengths and build them and find new skills by focusing on what it is that you're already good at.
Yeah. Because you would have learned a lot in like your past jobs, and some of those skills will be relevant to the job that you are trying to go for. It's just you might not necessarily have like the technical experience, but that's okay. This is something that you can learn.
Ian, from your perspective, what would be your sort of top tips for this, you know, trying to avert the stress that comes with changing path?
Well, and you can't avoid some of that stress, right? Because there's the fear of the unknown, there's the fear of where am I going, but there's also, and I think you've hit the nail on the head, there's actually, you know, do I actually understand what my own strengths actually are and what I'm bringing to a new role? You know, I might not be quite so brave, but I always try and look at when I'm stepping into something new, is one foot in something I know and the other foot, you know, completely me. So I've kind of got this safe ground that I know, I don't know, you know, if I was going to in any other career right now, I would be fairly comfortable with the fact that I know how to manage people and lead people. Okay, now it's the concept of about where am I doing that? What's the context that I'm doing that within? And that might be the new thing for me. Or it might be that I'm staying within an engineering discipline and I'm going to try a different, you know, I'm not going to be leading or managing in the same way. I'll do something else. But we can very often get ourselves down about the skills that we don't have and then forget about the ones that we do. And I think we just need to play that through. And certainly with a lot of the young people that I see through assessment centres, you know, they've got some amazing skills in potentially sport, for instance, about how they might lead a team of people or how they might gather people, or even, you know, organising socials, right? Mm. That's a skill. That is a, you know, we were talking about the people stuff earlier on. You know, if you kind of recognise that I am that person, I'm the glue that holds the team together, or I'm the encourager in the team or something like that, then you can translate that. And as saying, you know, again, if you've got that curiosity to learn, then I think that we can provide opportunities for that. But certainly being true to yourself.
I think one thing I would also add in terms of this averting stress is that, you know, remembering that doing new things and learning new stuff is hard, and it's okay to find it hard. It's okay to be stuck on something for a really long time. You're not stupid or childish or any of those things if you don't get something. Yeah. It's just, you know, we just all learn at different speeds, and we learn some things fast and some things slow. And I think sometimes there's quite a lot of focus, particularly it's sort of drilled into us in education that, you know, particularly in lessons like maths, for instance, you know, oh, I can't get the answer and it's super stressful and I'm not good at this, and, you know, and that feeling in and of itself, feeling like you don't get something, that can sometimes be the source of stress. But, you know, everyone who's gone through this process, and, you know, I know it, you know it, Victoria, and you'll probably see it a lot with the people you're working with and in your own career too. We've all had moments where we've been like, oh my God, is this worth it? Should we have done this? This is too hard. It's not right for me, you know. Well,
and it's the approach to learning, you know. So why is it that as babies, our learning to walk is trial and error, and we fall over all the time, and we pick ourselves up and we carry on because the prize is worth it at the end, you know. Yet when we are kind of more adults, we forget that trial and error is actually part of that learning process. Yeah. And actually we get quite discouraged when it isn't going quite so well.
So it's a question to both of you. Are you open to reskilling in the future? And if so, to what? Ian, I'm going to start with you.
So I definitely am, right? I can't see a world where I'll actually retire, but I actually kind of see a world where I want to do something different. So if I was to choose my perfect right now, it would be some kind of kite surfing tutor on a beach in a, you know, totally non-tech environment. But, you know, do you know what? It would keep me happy.
I love it. Okay, Victoria.
Oh, I'd probably actually look into a lot of history.
Ooh.
Because I enjoy visiting museums. I've always loved it as a kid. And if I had to reskill, I'd probably be a museum creator at some point.
Oh, I love
curator.
That.
Curator, yes.
Or creator.
Creator and curator. All of the tours.
I'll 3D model a new museum. Why not?
Do it.
I love that. One final question I want to ask you guys. What would be your advice to someone who may be currently feeling a little stuck in their career and maybe wanting to hit that reset button that we've been speaking about in this podcast? What would be your advice, Ian?
It's worth a step. Right. Okay. And, you know, the best time to make a change was yesterday. And if not then, it's today. Don't wait for tomorrow.
Ooh,
love it.
I don't think I can follow on from that. That's just too good.
Come on, give us a piece of advice, Victoria. What do you think? Your friend comes to you, you're at a restaurant, they're going, I feel like I need to change. What would you say?
I'd just say just do it. If they feel like they need to change, just go out, spend time sort of discovering themselves, really. Find out what they actually want to do. And then just go and find the best means to learn, really, how to do it.
I think it is about, as you say, having that tenacity to go, yes, I'm going to do this, but then having a little bit of restraint, as you said, Victoria, to be like, let's work out what actually is best for me.
Yeah, I feel like with jobs, you can say, oh, I want to be a graphic designer, but that can mean literally anything now, because there are so many different paths that you can take with just being a graphic designer, really. You can go into print, you can go into digital, you can go into app design, so... Yeah,
and that's it. It's using the people that are around you. You know, whether that be mentors at work or heroes that you can go off and write to and find out what they did. I mean, the barriers to communication now are so low, but we tend to avoid using them. And there's so much experience out there, so much richness about people that have done this kind of stuff before. And, you know, we live in a world where people like to share some of that stuff.
And on podcasts like you guys. Speaking of which, I want to say a big thank you, because you guys have been absolutely awesome. Thank you for joining us on the Get 2020 Vision podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. We've covered a lot of really interesting stuff, which will hopefully give you, the listener, something to consider. For me, some of the things that we spoke about in this podcast really comes down to change is hard, but nowadays, in particular, very, very doable. We spoke about the importance of soft skills as well as hard technical skills, but really the bottom line seems to be that the most important thing is to be curious. As always, this podcast is created to help give you more clarity on your career path. So if you have any questions you want answered, please send them to get2020vision@qa.com or search #get2020vision on social media. Until next time, I've been Gemma Milne. This has been Get 2020 Vision, brought to you by QA. To support the show, please remember to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom, or wherever you listen to your favourite podcasts. To find out more about the work QA does, visit qa.com.